On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will congratulate the Los Angeles Dodgers on their 2024 World Series title and also the Yankees. Did they win?
No,
but they certainly lost. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world who hasn't slept since Gerrit Cole forgot to cover first base. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman. And while Mr. Cole may lose a lot of sleep over the next couple of years thinking about that play, we already have.
Now, is it losing sleep if you are purposefully not sleeping? You know, we were not even trying to sleep in the hours since Walker Buehler struck out Alex Verdugo to win the World Series. If you are watching this on YouTube, you might be like, what am I looking at? That's Jordan in Jake's room. You're right. I am still in New York City, obviously, staying with my dear friend Jake Mintz. The 2024 Major League Baseball season is over, and we have not slept since it ended. We were writing. We were enjoying the sights and sounds of the post game. And now we are here early on Thursday morning, Halloween morning, about to talk about the scariest fifth inning that ever was for the Yankees of New York.
You know who else probably hasn't slept, though, is Kike Hernandez, because that dude knows his way around a good time. And even though the Dodgers flew home tonight, the conquering Los Angeles Dodgers, I gander that Mr. Hernandez kept the party going on the flight. Before we dig into this wild, wacky bananas game five, let's just clap it up. Los Angeles Dodgers World Series champions. They did it.
Not only did they do it. I mean, we will certainly have some discourse about this game five, about how hard the Yankees lost it. But the Dodgers won the most games in the regular season, and they finished the season with the most wins in the league and the last win of the season. And ultimately, that's what we expected the day spring training began. And here we are at the end of October, and the Dodgers are indeed the champs.
The day Ohtani turned out to not be on that plane to Toronto, this is exactly what we expected. And while this game five was more a failure of the Yankees than a triumph of the Dodgers, the series and the season indicates otherwise. So while when we pick this particular nine inning block apart and dunk on the pinstripes, Dodger fans, rest assured knowing that in the totality, your team more than earned what they won. This game is a story in three parts. A big lead, an inning from hell, and an epilogue. And we will begin, as most baseball games do, in the first inning. Top of the first, Gerrit Cole, Yankee ace, pitching the game of his life. On a great moment on the pregame Fox broadcast, I believe Jeter said it was the game of his career, and A-Rod said, I'll take you one step further, it's the game of his life. Adorable moment there from Mr. Rod. Cole looks good in the first. Yankee Stadium's starting to feel the buzz. Bottom of the first, Jack Flaherty on the mound. Flaherty, who was so good in game one. We get a repeat of the NLCS. And I warned everyone of this on the last podcast. I said, Jack Flaherty, can he bounce back? And the answer was no. Now, the velocity was there, but the command certainly was not. And after getting Gleyber Torres to ground out, to start the inning, he walks Juan Soto, and then the sleeping giant wakes up.
Aaron Judge has had some troubles at the plate in this World Series. Really, this month, he's had a few big swings. We have been waiting for that Judge World Series homer, the guy who has hit more home runs than anyone in baseball over the last handful of seasons. It was going to come eventually. And yes, Judge has had some issues, but you throw that big man 93 down the middle, and then he had started to be looking better in these recent games. Boy, did he not miss this. And the only thing I will say about this home run, This is one of those home runs that is distance-wise, like where it lands, is where left-handed hitters are crushing balls.
Mm.
You know, like this is not a normal opposite field home run. And it is, of course, going to be lost to history. But in the moment, I was like, oh, yeah, baby, that is Aaron Judge.
And when you watch, you're like, why doesn't he just do that all the time?
Well,
right?
He ain't getting 93 down the middle all the time.
Well, he gets it a lot. Anyway, that sends the stadium into a frenzy. And then it continues when the next batter, Jazz Chisholm Jr., also rocks one into the seats in right field. And it's like, all right, you know, I made a dinner reservation for LA at this point. Okay, I didn't book non-refundable flights or anything, but I made a dinner reservation. So that's where this was at in the early innings.
Yeah, and Cole goes out there and delivers another 1-2-3 inning in the second. The Yankees add another run in the second inning with a Volpe double and a Verdugo single. And again, everything is coming up Yankees. Flaherty is bounced after just four outs. They bring in Anthony Bonda. He kind of calms things down there in the second. But in the bottom of the third, Ryan Brazier comes in. And I believe on the first pitch of the bottom of the third inning, yes, a 95-mile-an-hour fastball to Giancarlo Stanton. Big G delivers his seventh home run of the postseason. Also an opposite field blast out to right field that he made look laughably easy. And of course, the key part of this one, which I guess we did not realize until a few minutes after, because we were, of course, in the ballpark, is that Aaron Boone was doing his required in-game managerial interview with, I believe, Tom Verducci, the second, which makes sense because it's at the beginning of the inning and they try to wrap it up before anything happens in the inning. But Giancarlo wasn't waiting around. And we get a moment there where Boone just sees that ball come off the bat of Stanton. He goes, bang! He hits him with the Mike Breen, and the Yankees are up 5-0. And again, you know, after the rout in game four, it was just, and you get these homers from these three big Judge Jazz Stan right out the gate, and you're just like, here we go. Back to LA we go. And that's what it felt like.
Well, and it wasn't just that they pounced so early. It was that the Dodgers just straight up really didn't have a pitching plan. And Dave Roberts admitted this after the fact. And I quote, this is foreshadowing or spoilering. Obviously, if I have to use the potential game seven starter in the ninth inning, that speaks to we didn't have enough pitching. I was trying to get as much as I could out of Jack Flaherty. Right. And so this was not some master grand plan. This was Dave Roberts being like, well, he looks like crap, so we got to pivot.
And it is funny because before the game, when we were kind of debating, I don't know who I was talking to about this, but it's talking about, like, all right, let's say Flaherty does stink, right? We would talk about, oh, well, he's kind of alternated good and bad starts. If he's bad, what is the plan? And I kind of said, like, they're just going to start rolling out their best guys and hope for the best and then figure out the ninth inning when they get there. And that's basically what happened, but it was not particularly smooth sailing all the way. Now, top of the fourth, let's get to the last positive moment for the New York Yankees in 2024. Now, I know they take the lead again later, but this is the last true highlight, I would say, of the 2024 season as Mookie Betts takes. Oh, yeah. Do you want to say something first? Go ahead.
Tell this play first, and then I have something.
Okay. I know you have something to say. I've podcasted you for a long time. Mookie Betts draws a leadoff walk against Gerrit Cole, who still has not allowed a hit to this point. And then Freddie Freeman comes up, and again it's 5-0, right? So he's in attack mode, even though he walks Mookie, and Freddie Freeman just rips a ball to left center field, and Aaron Judge, center fielder. Just still an amazing thing that we should not take for granted, but here we go.
A flawed defender, but flawed defender. Still impressive.
Okay, sorry. We're getting there. Freddie Freeman launches one left center field. Judge ranges back and, I mean, makes one of the better defensive plays of his career. I don't really think. I know he's robbed some home runs, but a lot of those, it's like he gets back there and then he's tall and he jumps up. This was like he needed to book it to get there, leap and grab, crashes into the fence, and you're just, and another incredible crowd pop, as you've mentioned, and it's, which was whatever, the fourth or fifth one of the game so far. And you're just like, everything's coming up, Yankees. This is it. If Freddie's going to rip a ball like that and it's not going to drop for extra bases, the Yankees are going to win this baseball game. That's not what happened. It was what it felt like at the time.
It is 8:45 a.m. right now. And I assume that anybody headed to school is already there or on their way. I wonder if there are any children in this wonderful city who, because of bedtime, were put under the covers around this time of night with the Yankees up by 5 after the Judge play at what would have been like 9:45, maybe?
No, 9:30? Not that. I don't think that late. But okay, the point is 9. Yeah, after 9. Kids, I assume, are going to bed around 9.
Big day tomorrow. Sure. You know, big day, Thursday, Halloween. Like, yeah. We're going to be up late.
Got to get some rest for trick-or-treating. Yeah, of course.
Yanks are looking good. Bedtime. I wonder if that happened to anybody. It has to have happened to some Yankees fans out there. Some little kid woke up. How much did they win by?
Ooh. Is that worse than actually staying up to watch it? No. Anyway, we go back to the fourth inning. Bottom of the fourth, Kopech comes in. He gets through the inning and the top of the order without allowing any runs. So good for Michael Kopech.
And now we will move to part two of this beautiful, disastrous, horrifying roller coaster of a ball game. The fifth inning from hell. Boo, boo, boo.
All right. So the Yankees at this point are winning 5-0. They have 3 home runs. Gerrit Cole is throwing a no hitter. What more could you ask for? I mean,
great time if you're a Yankees fan to go to bed. Really, I'm telling you.
Yep.
Pack it up. Great.
Honestly.
Cool.
If you're a Yankees fan, good time to tune out of this podcast. Go check out something else.
Great season. Go
unless Knicks. unless you're our producer, Andrew Hartz, in which case, tough.
Sorry, buddy. Sorry, bucko.
Yankee fan Hartz, we love you. All right, top of the fifth. Kike Hernandez leads off with a single. Okay, no hitter over. And at this point, feeling in the press box is, all right, Gerrit Cole's not going to throw a no hitter. So we don't have to worry about, you know, writing Gerrit Cole throws no hitter in the World Series. But Gerrit Cole is cruising, and we know that they are going to let him go as long as possible. And then Tommy Edman comes up. And Tommy Edman lines a ball to center field, right to Aaron Judge, where an inning earlier he had showed us what he was capable of with the glove. And Aaron Judge had caught hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fly balls over the course of his major league career. But this one, a low line drive, a simple play, was not one of them. This ball, you can see on the broadcast, he sort of took his eyes off it the last second, seemed to be looking in at the base runner, Hernandez, and the ball just clanged off his glove. He just dropped. He didn't catch it. From what I can tell, it is the first time since August of 2017 that Aaron Judge has just dropped a fly ball. He's had some other errors, some throwing errors, some like singles that he misplayed or doubles that he maybe whatever. Over the years, but not since he was a rookie did he just drop a fly ball, and it was his first error overall since I believe May of 2023. And that on its own is just like what just happened? But it's 5-0, and it's first and second, and Gerrit Cole is still looking good. Everything's gonna be fine, right? No. Okay, what happens next?
A ball is doinked into the 3-4, the 5-6, sorry, the 5-6 hole. Anthony Volpe ranges to his right, fields, and throws to third, but he doesn't throw it good, and it bounces off the turf. Chaz Chisholm Jr. tries to scoop it. He does not, and the bases are loaded. This play was Volpe's fault. It was a bad throw. Jazz, his setup was not ideal, but he still... You can't really blame him. This was just on Volpe. So now we have the bases loaded and nobody out. Gerrit Cole, to get a breather, receives a mound visit from Matt Blake. Settles down. Looks good. strikes out Gavin Lux with the bases loaded and nobody out. Throw that moment in the back of your mind for later. Gavin Lux, bases loaded. Just pocket it. Next batter, Shohei Ohtani, bases loaded, one out. And with a dastardly breaking ball, gets NL MVP in waiting, swinging on a strikeout, and the stadium is booming. Gerrit Cole is going to Houdini his way out of this. And at this point, he is throwing gasoline. He is emptying the tank in this spot. And you hear pitchers say this, particularly pitchers like Cole. Verlander used to do this all the time. There's more in the tank. I'll use it when I need it, right? Cole sits like 96, but he has 99, 98 when he wants it. Now, he can't do it on every pitch, or otherwise he would just throw that hard all the time. But in this moment, it's like, whoa, this is Gerrit Cole willing this series back to Los Angeles.
Not just that, he appeared unfazed by the defensive disaster class that was appearing around him, that was occurring around him, right? He was like, you know what? You guys want to screw up? That's fine. Here's 99. Here's the nastiest curve you've ever seen. I'm going to get out of this. And by the way, on the next batter, he makes another extremely good pitch to Mookie Betts.
For that whole inning after he loaded the bases, it was as if Cole was acting like the defense behind him didn't even exist. Like when Satchel Paige said, get off the diamond, I'm punching these fools out. But the problem with being so locked in is that sometimes as a pitcher, you are also the defender. And when Mookie Betts nubs one, a spinner to first base towards Anthony Rizzo, Rizzo fields it. Cole starts moving towards first base. And after a couple of steps, he breaks it down. Rizzo picks his head up. There is no one covering the bag. Mookie Betts sprints through it for what is ruled a single. It's an error on Gerrit Cole. And that was the sliding door moment that will keep Gerrit Cole up for at least the next few months.
Yes. Now, first of all, it's a nasty slider, perfectly placed. Mookie Betts, again, he barely gets it. Exit velo of like 45 or something. It's spinning towards Rizzo. Gerrit Cole's answer after the game about this play was confounding to me, to be completely honest, because obviously it's one of the first things he's asked about. And he said the way that he described it, he made it seem like his initial instinct was that he could get the ball, which when you watch it does not look remotely plausible in the slightest, and speaks to how locked in he was and how poor of a read he got on the ball off the bat. Because yes, Mookie Betts did not hit it hard, but this was not a bunt. This was a ground ball to the first baseman. But that is why Gerrit Cole broke inwards towards the ball when he really needed to be going towards the base. And the fact that this play, yes, it had some spin, and that pulled Rizzo a little bit to his right, that made it a little bit harder for him to get over. But the point is, Gerrit Cole, for whatever reason, did not go to first base. And to watch a play that is literally the first thing, the first image of spring training that you see, is this play being practiced. No, it is not in the World Series with a wild inning that had unfolded before you, obviously. But in, you know, functionally, that is what it is. And to watch Gerrit Cole not make that play in that moment was just truly unbelievable. And then it's one run scores, but the bases are now still loaded. Still with two outs, though. Again, I know Freddie Freeman's coming up, but the way that Gerrit Cole is still pitching, you're still like, okay, this is a disaster, but also they're still right in this. He can get Freddie Freeman out. But he doesn't. He throws the fastest pitch of the night to Freddie Freeman. This is where he starts losing the command a little bit. It's a fastball that Freddie can obviously handle because he is your World Series MVP. He dumps a single into center field. That makes it 5-3. Teoscar follows. And again, now the command from Cole is wavering. Not a surprise. The pitch count is up there at this point. He kind of hangs a slider, two-strike slider to Teoscar Hernandez. What a swing from Teo to launch one to center off the wall in center field to tie the game. Mookie scores. Freddie comes around. Freddie running real good at this point. No concern about that ankle. That tied the game. And what was so wild is that, like, that tied the game. But it was like, there is no way that that can happen and the Yankees can win this game. Now, again, there's more to come, and we're going to take a break here and we'll get through the rest of the game. But it was just, by the way, apparently Max Muncy walked after that still. There were still two more batters and then Kike grounds out. Again, 38 pitches, one of the most surreal 15 minutes of baseball I've ever watched by far, and I will never forget it. And it was a sequence of errors that you couldn't fathom at most levels of baseball, let alone, you know, the World Series and the New York Yankees. But man, I mean, it just all happened at once. It was really, really something to behold.
If you steal my laptop out of my car that I leave on the street parked and unlocked and my laptop in there overnight, I'm giving you the opportunity, right? The Dodgers had to capitalize on the Yankees' mistakes, and they deserve credit for doing so. You still need to go in my car and take my stuff, right? However, if I don't leave the car unlocked or my laptop in there, you're not getting away with it. You're just not. And to me, that is the thing. The Yankees leave the door wide open, and when you're playing a team like the Dodgers, you just cannot give them three free outs in a World Series game with the middle of the order coming up. And it is the most poetic, perfect way for this Yankee season to crumble to the ground, because even though they reached the World Series, they have been a sloppy team at the margins, on the bases, in the field, all season long. And so for this to be their bugaboo, their Achilles heel, and their downfall, it is perfect. It is fitting. It is what every Yankee fan that is paying attention has been saying for a long time, what me and all the other people who are at Yankee Stadium watching this team all the time have been saying. So it just kind of feels right. Let's take a break, and when we get back, we'll tell you how 5-5 after 5 turned into, I don't have anything else. Bye. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Let's do the epilogue. Part in the season where it all feels done and dusted. Now, this is something that'll often happen in like the college level, where like you're playing a really competitive winner's bracket game and you lose it in dramatic fashion. And then the next game is just like, well, we will go on, remember. And even though there was tension in this game, the Yankees did actually take the lead. To me, it just felt like a black and white montage of, you know, the friends we met along the way.
Yeah. And again, though, the tension was, again, because the energy, I mean, the doom and gloom was present, right? The only tension was, particularly in the sixth inning, in the bottom of the sixth, when Brusdar Gratterall doesn't have it and walks it Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, and Giancarlo takes the lead with the sac fly. You're kind of looking ahead at the game and just think, and looking at the state of the Dodgers bullpen after a bullpen day the day before, and you're just thinking, so how are they getting enough outs? Which is also fitting, because we've been saying that the entire season, and they still found a way to do it in particularly entertaining fashion at the end. But as we mentioned, the Yankees do take the lead in the sixth inning. And yes, there was some excitement when Giancarlo Stanton got a sac fly. But I will say, when your inning starts with Soto and Judge walking, you probably would like to score more than one run. And they were unable to do that. Blake Treinen comes in, gets out of the inning. to get Volpe to ground out. We go to the top of the seventh. Gerrit Cole, by the way, is still pitching.
And it is around this point that another starting pitcher enters as a character. As Walker Buehler, who started game three 2 days earlier and was slated to start game seven, if it arose, makes his way down to the Dodger bullpen. Walker Buehler, who is a free agent at the end of the year, drafted by the Dodgers in 2015.
We are at the end of the year. Just so remember. He is a free agent. True. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry. Just
a free agent at the end of this podcast. Drafted by the Dodgers in 2015. Gets TJ immediately. Comes up with the club and is just like the one of the five best pitchers in the world from like 2018 to 2021. Like, he's amazing. He's starting game one for them in the playoffs when they win in 2020. Gets hurt, blows out, struggles this year, goes on like a 2 month hiatus away from the team to get outside advice on his mechanics, and is like good, but in shorter spurts in this postseason. And when he walks down to the pen, we turn to each other and we're like, that's a story. That's going to be nuts.
That's
Walker Buehler is going down there. That's a story. He is going down there to get at least the last three outs. And so when he goes down there, and this is important with Trinan getting the last out of the six, like, you see the plan. You're like, they're going to try and get two from Trinan, two more from Trinan, and then they're going to give Buehler the ninth. And that's exactly how it pans out.
Yes. Now, meanwhile, Gerrit Cole is still pitching. Just ridiculous, right? He comes out after that disastrous fifth, and he goes 1-2-3 in the sixth, and he comes back out for the top of the order in the seventh at 98 pitches, I believe.
With the Yankees up by one run.
Like, that's, again, like, if you have been sick and tired of starting pitchers being pulled, you know, prematurely over the last handful of years in the postseason, this was just every version of that. I mean, how many different times would any other starter be pulled before this? It's like you could pick 50. But he comes back out and he gets Ohtani and bets the ground out. And you're like, oh my God, is this guy going to get through seven with a lead after that fifth inning? Not quite. He walks Freddie Freeman. In comes Clay Holmes, who walks Teoscar Hernandez, but strikes out Max Muncy. Max Muncy, more on him later.
And it's not as if Cole is really losing the velo. Like, his last four seamer of the night, which was to Freeman, would pitch 105, clocked it at 97. And I want to take this pause right here as Holmes comes in for Cole. What a night for Gerrit Cole, because we will remember his lapse in focus, that one mistake. And that is how this sport works. It is unforgiving. Because he was brilliant. He was sensational. As far as the pitching goes, he did everything anybody could have dreamed of. If he scoops up that ball and tags first base or covers first and Rizzo tosses it to him, we're recording this podcast 7 hours ago, and you and I are on a flight to Los Angeles, right? He pitched extraordinarily well. It wasn't enough. It wasn't enough again. And I wake up today, I guess I continue being awake today, feeling a little bad for Gerrit Cole. Because for this season for the Yankees, for the failures to be on Cole and Judge is so cruel. Because Judge carried them to October. Cole seemed like he was getting a Tommy John in spring training and rehabbed at the major league level and returned to his form and was very good. And just one, like 3 seconds. It was literally like 3 seconds of forgetting to cover first. Yeah. What an outing. What a pitcher. And I hope he gets his ring one day. But it wasn't last night.
You know what he needed? He needed he needed a pitcher's helper.
Hell yeah.
I don't think that's a phrase that we've really talked about, because I guess you only see it like in PE class or like in at baseball camp, like for like the pitching machine.
T-ball, dude. T-ball.
T-ball, right. When like the coach is pitching, but you don't want to have like someone's dad like defending against 6-year-olds. So you have like some kid be the pitcher's helper. It's not doing the pitching, but they're like only have to worry about the defense.
That's what they should call the assistant pitching coach.
Anyway, shouts out Connor McGinnis. Anyway, everything you said is correct. Gerrit Cole is amazing. I appreciate him dearly. Watching him, a man who is someone who we appreciate when he speaks. He is very insightful. He does not give you cliche answers for the most part, because he is a smart person who is thinking about things and wants to give you insight and wants to be very honest. But to be in there after the Yankees lost tonight and to watch him struggle to come up with the words, and he spoke for a while. He ultimately, you know, processed it and tried to go through it. But in his words, this is what I led my story with: as bad as it gets. As bad as it gets, that feeling. Anyway.
However, when he leaves the game,
the Yankees are winning.
The Yankees are still winning when he leaves the game, but not for long. Blake Treinen carves through the bottom of the order like a machete through soup. And we move to the top of the eighth. And this is where it goes off the rails. In comes Tommy Canley and his two tight pants and his million changeups and the PS5 and that's always just parked in front of his locker that he's playing at all hours of the day, and his big thighs and his Eagles fandom, and he does not get the job done.
No, I was going to check if I actually hadn't looked at it until now. He went down with the Combio ship. He continued throwing only changeups in this abbreviated outing, but they were not working. The command was bad. He allows a single, singles to Kike and Edmund, and then walks Will Smith. And is not
very quickly on the very quickly on the Edmund single. Edmund hitting right-handed. He's a switch hitter, which was very interesting. And we almost missed it because the at-bat went so quick. But Edmund's hitting righty against a right-hander in Canley just because he's only throwing changeups. Yeah. And while Edmund doesn't hit the ball very hard, he certainly like hits it to a spot he would not have hit it if he was hitting lefty.
That's absolutely right. And he's done this on a handful of occasions. He's obviously much better hitting right-handed, but of course, usually you're going to stick with the platoon advantage there. Anyway, Will Smith walks on 4 pitches, and it's very apparent that Mr. Canley does not have it. And at this point, Luke Weaver comes in to attempt the impossible. Once again, the Dodgers have the bases loaded with nobody out. The Yankees clinging to this one-run lead. And Luke Weaver, who, I mean, what an unbelievable story Luke Weaver is. And will continue to be, as there's a lot of questions about this Yankees bullpen moving forward, but Luke Weaver will remain a big part of it. He comes in with the bases loaded and nobody out, and he does his best, but the Dodgers are more than good enough to get the job done here. And what that means is Gavin Lux putting together a very, very impressive at-bat where he did not chase when he needed to not chase. He ultimately drives the ball to center field for a sac fly that ties the game.
Then, I told you to remember Gavin Lux earlier in this show.
Yeah.
Because a true ball knower knows that the Lux at-bat is so important. Now, Lux has looked overmatched and exhausted. He is banged up, okay? His hip is, like, not great. And at points in this postseason, he has just been dominated
with the
strike zone.
He's the closest Dodgers bat that has looked overwhelmed, really, at times this month.
Max Muncy has looked out of sync. Gavin Lux has looked overwhelmed. And he had failed in a similar spot earlier in this game. And when you see Lux against Weaver, you're like, well, shit, I mean, he's going to strike out again. No, because he gets the job done, flies it to center, ties the game. Huge 90 feet here from Tommy Edman, tagging up from second to third, because then Mookie Betts on the first pitch of his at-bat. I am skipping an important part of this game. I apologize. I'm very tired.
Well, it isn't. Because as you just mentioned, Tommy Edman advances to third anyway. Okay. However, Shohei Ohtani comes up and we get a catcher's interference. Now, this doesn't end up mattering because all that happens is Ohtani goes to first and Will Smith goes to second. No runner advances closer into scoring position. And Will Smith doesn't end up scoring. But the fact that the Yankees managed to also squeeze in a catcher's interference into this game and a disengagement violation later is, I mean, I don't know if I'll actually remember that. But in the moment, I was like, oh my God, how this game is so ridiculous. The Yankees are just inventing new ways to make mistakes with gloves. And that was one of them. Especially for Ohtani, who was not having a very good game, let alone a World Series. I know he's injured. Anyway, that loads the bases again. Edmund's already on third. Mookie drives in that go-ahead run with the sac fly. And, you know, I will say it was the first pitch for Mookie. And, you know, Weaver didn't get the fastball up against Lux. And I think that made it easier for him to kind of drive that ball. Whereas I think if Weaver relocates that fastball up, I think Lux has a much higher chance of swinging through it. You know, Weaver goes upstairs to Mookie and he's, I mean, again, Mookie had a pretty amazing postseason. Like, did he have, I mean, he did have four home runs and he had some extra big extra base hits, but he had so many at bats that were not like massive hits, but just his unbelievable bat to ball skills, which has been the core of his offensive profile the entire time, were in play so many times during this series. And this was the final example of that as he takes that 96 mile an hour heater above the zone and rips it out to center for that sac fly.
And that inning ends. We head to the bottom of the eighth with the Yankees down a run, but the Dodgers up a run with the season, the series, and the balance. And Soto is up to start it. And this is where the Yankees have a chance. Blake Treinen out for his third inning. He had gotten the last out in the sixth, all of the seventh, starting the eighth. And Soto rolls out to second base for maybe, ? His last at bat as a Yankee. More on that next week. Aaron Judge
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Double. And you're like, he's seeing it. Like, Judge is back. If they had played seven two more games.
Oh, it was a great at bat. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You could argue it's just, you know, JoJo style, too little, too late. But Judge got back to where he needed to get back to in game five. Runner on second. Jazz Chisholm walk, which did not see coming.
No.
Personally.
No.
Like, good at bat from Jazz.
Yeah, but Treinen's like, again, his pitch count's getting up there here, obviously, as you
and
mentioned.
He's spraying it.
He's spraying it.
And
oh, this
key
next
moment
one.
Of the game.
Oh, man, this next one.
One of my biggest pet peeves is batter walks. Next batter swings at the first pitch. And it's not a every single time thing. Like, you don't always have to take the first pitch of that at bat. But when a dude is so obviously spraying it and his pitch count is going up, it's the type of situation where you just want to see one, even if it's a strike. And while I am not one to give hitting advice to Giancarlo Stanton, who might one day be in the Hall of Fame, and I understand Stanton gets a pitch in the zone here, something he can drive, he just gets under it too much and he flies out to center. And it's like, bah.
Yeah.
You had Treinen on the ropes.
Yeah.
You had him.
Yeah.
And
it's not like Stanton, obviously, he strikes out a good bit, but it's not like he's uncomfortable being down in the count, you know? But he thought he could do something with that. And look, Stanton is hardly the issue. But to your point, it felt on that first pitch there. And then, especially because, sadly, one of the other, you know, subplots of just like watching this Yankees offense, but particularly in this one where the top half was showing up in such a big way, is that Anthony Rizzo, God bless him, what a career. And maybe he's got another year or two in him. And I know he's dealt with a lot of injuries this year. But by the end here, it was just non-competitive. And that's what happened here. Trying to kind of locks back in and strikes him out on four pitches. And it was just like, all right, well, that's kind of that.
Trying and floating. I mean, unreal.
Yeah, it was an incredible performance. He got the most outs of any pitcher in this game for the Dodgers.
Most pitches. He threw more pitches than Jack Flaherty.
He threw more pitches than Flaherty, right? So just an incredible performance. And then obviously, you know, top of the ninth, we're just like, oh my God, Walker Buehler's going to pitch. Oh my God, Walker Buehler's going to pitch. Can they add on? Can they get more? They get some traffic, we get the disengagement violation, whatever. But the point is the Dodgers are threatening to add on, but Mark Leiter Jr. comes in and gets Luke Weaver's mess all cleaned up. So we go to the bottom of the ninth, and here comes Walker Buehler.
You know all about Buehler's day off. What about Buehler's day on when he thought he'd be off? That's what this was.
That's honestly, yes. I mean, there have been many jokes about that. Isn't it literally his Twitter handle? But by all accounts, Walker Buehler, I think he said after the game he didn't throw a baseball like on Wednesday until he got to the bullpen. I mean, awesome. I assume he was playing catch for him, but maybe not. Anyway, he's out there and he comes in for the bottom of the Yankees lineup. And you're just thinking, all right, well, it's the bottom of the Yankees lineup. We've seen limited production from this group, but it is Volpe leading off and it's Buehler pitching on one day of rest. If they can just get it back to the top. But Buehler is carving him up. And he knows that these young hitters at the bottom of this lineup, Volpe and Wells, if you just spin it, if you just rip your nastiest breaker, these kids are going to swing and they're going to have some trouble. And that's what happens. Volpe grounds out. Wells strikes out swinging. And I mean, as far as, you know, final outs, the other day we were watching a bunch of final outs of the World Series, you know, from the last couple decades. This is a pretty gnarly one. This is a pretty nasty curveball to get Verdugo swinging. Verdugo does not swing and miss often, but he was just waving at these ones from Buehler. And that's a wrap. That's it. Walker Buehler did it. What a moment for him. What a World Series for him. What a way for his Dodgers career to end. He's certainly not concerned about that right now, but he will be beloved in Los Angeles forever, no matter where he goes in the coming months. And this will, of course, be the crowning achievement for that.
In his reaction to this, I love the reactions that different pitchers have when they get the last out of the World Series, right? The most iconic one there are really two most iconic ones in my mind. One is Brad Lidge dropping to his knees when the Phillies win the World Series. The other is Daniel Hudson, who's on this Dodgers team, hucking his glove into the night when the Nationals beat the Astros. What Buehler does is so cool. He gets the out, he spreads his arms out wide, and he looks to the Dodger dugout and he just waits for the hug.
Yeah. It was an I'm him moment. It was kind of like, yeah, I did that. I'm Walker effing Buehler. Like, that's what I do. And I think the personality came through there. Now, obviously, there's more opportunities for that kind of charisma and showmanship when you finish the World Series on a strikeout. It's a little bit harder when someone flies out, you know, down the line to Kyle Tucker, grounds one somewhere. The final out always has a different flavor. But for Walker Buehler to get that moment that we will watch forever, and when we watch that, it won't be, oh, there's the closer. Of course, he did it. It'll be like, there's Walker Buehler saving the game. I assume his first save of his career. Yeah, of course it is, right? Very well may be the last save of his career. Now, I know you made the joke, too, as he trots in. This is someone who, at times, as an amateur, was like, can this guy start? Is this guy going to be able to hold up? Well, it's been an interesting career for him. But ultimately, this one relief appearance here, we will remember for a very, very, very long time. And there it was. The Dodgers were champions. And I'll just say now, before we take one more break, and then we'll come back. There is a lot to say about the 2024 Los Angeles Dodgers, And because of our responsibilities post game, and we're both kind of running around, and of course we were writing, like, you know, consuming the end of a World Series is very overwhelming. You know, there's just so many things happening. Not just so many things happening, but so many people that you start to think about. And I know you wrote a little bit about this for the Dodgers, but I think that, like, the Dodgers, this is a team with so many people that, like, need serious time to reflect on. And so we are going to do a lot more of that on our next episode after the parade, which is scheduled for Friday, and after we can kind of sleep and then digest what this really means to all the people on this roster, the ones that were playing at the end, and then also the ones that have been injured the whole year, some of the year recently, you know, a whole spectrum of these things, people that are future Hall of Famers, that are the most famous people on earth, people that are our friends like Brent Honeywell. But obviously the way that this game went and the way that it ended was right. The Dodgers were better. They were a lot better, honestly, by the end. And I think that that will be reflected in the fact that the series was five games. And I think it really will show, you know, in the way that the Yankees lost and the degree to which the Dodgers just ended up being, as we started the show with, the best team in baseball, as they were, you know, when they showed up at Camelback Ranch, and as they were tonight when Walker Buehler got that last out. So let's take a break, one more break, and when we return, some final thoughts before we maybe go to bed or maybe go play Xbox until I fly home. We'll be right back on Baseball Arborcast.
And welcome back to the end of the 2024 MLB season. The second we hang up on you folks, we're all free agents. Not really. We'll be going through the winter, don't you worry. A couple nuggets from postgame. Again, there are not a whole lot of people who are privileged to have the level of access we do to do a podcast as regularly as we do. And so we kind of feel obligated in a way to try and take all you wonderful listeners into some of the things we see. And there were really two Yankee moments that I want to touch on, one that you saw and one that I saw. So I'll let you start, Jordan. You were there for the Soto, thanks y'all, chat.
Yeah. I mean, this is, of course, one of the first things that people are wondering. It took a while for the Yankees clubhouse to open post game. Seems like Boone was addressing the team for maybe a little bit longer than expected, or longer than normal, but also, you know, makes some sense. But of course, Juan Soto is about to be the biggest story of the winter. And, you know, as with his season ending like this, with his Yankees season ending like this, will he stay? Will he go? He's one of the last players in the dugout. Of course, he was, I guess, two batters away when you know, Verdugo, the nine hitter, struck out to end the game, and he was sitting in the dugout with holding his bat and wearing his helmet, and he was one of the last guys in there in the dugout. And so he talked about, you know, what he was feeling in those moments. Nothing too surprising, but of course he's just being absolutely bombarded with, you know, do the Yankees have an advantage to bring you back? Do you think the Mets are going to come after you? Are you like, how important is it for you to stay with Judge? Like, do you want to stay in New York? Do you want to stay on the East Coast? Like, what matters the most to you in free agency? All these things, right?
Do you want to go to the Rockies?
No one asked that. That's on me. That's probably your journalistic failure that I didn't ask that. And Soto struck
Jordan, could you imagine if you rose your hand in the Soto scrum and said, "Hey, Juan, the Rockies are a team"?
Scott Boris once got a lot of money for one of his clients to sign with the Rockies. Anyway, the main tone, again, I wouldn't say there was anything stunning, right? But I think that the main things that Soto conveyed was, you know, this is free agency, right? This is whatever we're going to, you know, I'm going to talk to my people. And no doors are closed, he said. It's open season, baby. Like, let's get it on. And he kept saying it's about the teams. The teams need to, you know, people say, what are you looking for? What are you trying? Who do you want to? He's like, no, they got to come to me. You know, it's up to them. Someone asked, are you going to be comfortable if this lingers on? Like, do you want it to last a long time? Because, you know, some of these Boris free agencies have really lasted almost into March. And he's like, it's on the teams. You know, it's on them to make it. So he is just basically saying, you know, of course he said, loved his time with the Yankees. There was definitely some past tense used. I don't want to think too much into that, but I would say he played it pretty straight. I don't think there was anything too shocking. I think the one moment that was definitely funny was he got a question that was just like, you know, the fans love you here. Like, they've been chanting, we want Soto or re-sign Soto. They've been doing that nonstop for months. Does that, you know, play any impact you at all? And he said, kind of, he was like, he delivered the line, he was like, I think that might impact ownership's decision, but not necessarily, you know, for, he said he appreciates the fans, all those things. So it's nothing too shocking. It was pretty much everything you expected. Soto or Judge and Cole talking about how awesome he is and all these things and saying he's earned the right to go through this process and make the best decision for him, but they'd love to have him, how amazing he is. Boone talked about how great he was to manage all these things. So nothing too surprising, but it was, you know, there was a version where he could have been like, I love it here. I would love to make it work. We'll see what happens. It was much more of just like, I'm a free agent and we'll see what happens, you know? This is a process and I'm excited for it. And they said, and his teammates said, he should be excited for it. He earned it and all those things.
Ain't nothing free about that free agency. I'll tell you that. It's going to be one expensive agency.
that's how I was going to say last thing on this, Judge, because, you know, Soto's like, you know, all 30 teams, you know, available to all 30 teams. And then afterwards, Judge goes up there and he's really, yeah, you know, every team that can afford him will be calling his phone. It's like, yeah. So that's certainly a smaller list, but we will find out. That is going to be something we'll be talking about plenty. But that was Soto. Of course, that is something we will continue to talk about. We just mentioned now, by the way, we have our initial free agency rankings already up on Yahoo Sports. So you can take a look at that top 50 if you are so inclined. But tell me about what you saw outside the Yankees clubhouse, outside the Dodgers clubhouse.
Outside the Dodgers clubhouse. So I'm walking into the Dodgers clubhouse after a bunch of different stuff, and Aaron Boone is standing there waiting outside the Dodgers clubhouse, and the door to the clubhouse is open and he's in the tunnel. Like, he's not in there. He's kind of in the doorway, but 8 feet away. And he's got PR people with him and he's still in uniform, wearing what he wore all day. And he's got the ass, man. Like, duh, he's got the ass. I would too. And so would you. And he's out there waiting for Dave Roberts to congratulate the other manager on a World Series well won. And it is the type of thing that you see happen a lot. It's not always publicized, but after the Mets beat the Phillies earlier this year, Rob Thompson walked over to congratulate Carlos Mendoza, right? This does happen. But to see Boone outside that room with the door open and the music blaring, and you can smell the cigar smoke, you can smell the alcohol emanating through the hallway and to Boone, and that he's just on this precipice of getting there. It is this close and oh so far at the same time. Beautiful and tragic, a moment I certainly will not forget.
And again, it's just so interesting, right? Because how they feel about this, you know, we were comparing it going into that game four to, oh boy, this sure feels like 2022, where the Yankees made it so far and then just got absolutely worked, you know, by Houston. And if they got swept, you would have just said, damn, this wasn't even close. But because of how this went down, because of the momentum and confidence that they had picked up in that game four, of course, the odds were stacked against them to ultimately complete what would have been a historic comeback. And yes, this series still ended in 5 games, so it wasn't really that close. But to your point, to have a game like this, to feel like you were in position to go back to Los Angeles and end up losing in this fashion on your home field, is really something. Now, but again, as Aaron Boone said, and as all the Yankees fans are like, yep, they're better team. They play better. And that's what happened. That's true. They certainly deserve to win. But that is definitely an image that I'm glad you were able to share with us. Now, as we said before, we have much more Dodgers stuff to come. There are so many whole pod on Monday, which will be our next pod, because I think we need to sleep for a bit. A whole pod coming on Monday, Dodgers, parade, all that stuff. Okay. So, but big picture about as this World Series wraps up, this World Series that was kind of highly anticipated. And at least we can at least tell on a couple of individual players here as we kind of say goodbye. Let's do Freddie quickly, your World Series MVP. Okay.
And yours too.
Yes. You know, like Mookie, his legacy, his likely Hall of Fame career path, someone who was still very much in his prime, who had a World Series and an MVP, and just, again, one of the great hitters of his generations. He didn't need to have one of the greatest World Series that we'd ever seen to, you know, really make his mark as a player that will be remembered for a long time. But that he did. And that he did with an ankle that was barely functioning for the first couple of rounds. But boy, was it okay for these last few games. And yeah, this was a World Series performance that will go down in history as one that had a lot surrounding it. And on a team filled with so many famous players, Freddie is the one who ended. And you know, it's funny because going into the season, I believe I picked Freddie Freeman to win MVP, period. I thought that he would benefit from Ohtani in these ways and drive in just like an absurd amount of runs. And he ended up having a good season, but because of a lot of the stuff he was dealing with personally, of course, off the field with his son being sick and some own injuries that he was dealing with, it wasn't his best. He was still great, right? But he wasn't necessarily, you know, having the regular season that I'm sure he hoped to. But to have this narrative and to end up having one of the great World Series we've ever seen, which included, while he did not, you know, homer in this final game, he did have one of the big swings still there at the end, or I guess in the middle there in the fifth, was sensational. And Freddie Freeman is not someone that, the fact that he's even on the Dodgers at all is an amazing part of, you know, his career story and how much we talked about him leaving Atlanta in the first place, and all that went into that. But yeah, Freddie, I think, really elevated. Not that he needed to, but in terms of just an important player in our lifetime, I think that this World Series really did do that in a really significant way.
Shohei Ohtani deserves probably a bit more time. He did not have a great World Series.
2-for-19, really, I believe.
At all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, he was playing some of that with a shoulder that is definitely hurt, and he said he's going to go get checked out. He said that on either the Fox or the MLB Network broadcast. They asked about it. He was like, yeah, I'm going to see a doctor. But to witness Shohei Ohtani lifting the World Series trophy is awesome. I talk about this all the time, dude. I want the best players, the ones that we'll talk about for a long time, to have the experience of lifting that trophy so that when we talk about them and their legacy, that it is a part of it, that they can be remembered as someone who did it, who experienced the highest joy that exists in the sport. And to know that no matter what happens the rest of his career, Ohtani did that. That the most spectacular baseballing thing we have ever seen was rewarded with the ultimate honor. And that is so freaking cool.
I am excited to consume a lot more Ohtani content in the days to come, parade, all those things, and we'll talk about it more when we do the full Dodger show on Monday. But this anecdote is just amazing. Did you see this about Friedman? What Friedman said? Okay, this is all time stuff. This is from Bill Plunkett of the Orange County Register, who tweeted, Andrew Friedman said Shohei Ohtani told him during the celebration, "quote Let's do this 9 more times." he continues, I think this is also from Friedman. He gets one in his first year, so he thinks this is easy. Tremendous, right? Again, dude didn't have a winning season, let alone a postseason appearance with the Angels. He goes to the Dodgers. and wins it immediately. And yes, while he did not have, I mean, he had that one big hit in game one, but obviously, likely in part due to that injury, didn't necessarily have that World Series that he wanted. But man, what more to look, I mean, so much more to look forward to with Ohtani pitching in the World Series at some point with the Dodgers, and just so much with him that I'm sure we'll get into on our next pod as well.
After so many tungsten Armo Doyle games, for Shohei Ohtani to be carried by his team to a World Series championship is nothing if not just.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, he turned out to be so much more important than we ever could have thought in terms of their regular season. They do not have the best record in baseball if Shohei Ohtani does not have one of the great offensive seasons of all time. But that he did. He did do that. And they did have the best record in baseball, and they won the World Series, and he was happy. Last thing. We have to talk about Max Muncy. Max Muncy, who in the previous round, I believe, set a postseason record for most consecutive plate appearances reaching base, with I think 11 or 12, went 0-for after that through the end of the CS and into the World Series, where he went 0-for 16. And coming into this World Series, we wondered, what was the record? Who had the worst World Series as a hitter? We did a little stat heading through the magic of baseball reference, and the answer for most at-bats in a World Series without recording a hit is a gentleman by the name of Dal Maxville. Who is Dal Maxville? Jake is showing you his Wash U baseball shirt. Now, did Dal Maxville play baseball at Wash U? I guess yes, right? He must. Did he? Yes, yes, yes. He played baseball. Yeah. I know, I don't know what the status of like Wash U. I know the UAA wasn't a thing when Dal Maxville was playing, but this man did go to Wash U just like Jake. He was a shortstop who won four World Series, but this one he did not win. He won the 1964 World Series, the 1967 World Series, the 1972 World Series, and the 1974 World Series. But in 1968, he went 0-for-22 for the Cardinals as they lost in seven games to the Tigers. And Max Muncy, of all players, was pushing for this record. But because the Dodgers closed it out in five, he will have to settle for 20 hitless plate appearances, the most ever for a player in a World Series of five games or fewer. And guess who doesn't give half a crap? Max Muncy, of course. So congratulations to Max on avoiding Maxville history. But it is something, because he is a fellow Wash U legend like Jake Mintz is, we had to shout it out.
I think that's it. I mean, I could talk about Brent Honeywell for two more hours.
Save it for Monday.
If you want to read about him at all, you can read my story up on Yahoo Sports.
We have Dodger's story from our wonderful colleague, Russ Dorsey. Jake wrote about the Dodgers winning and how it means so much to so many people. I wrote about the Yankees lost, which I think we mentioned earlier, and how that happened and where they go from here with Soto. I mean, listen, there's a lot of big picture takeaways that I think we can also do as part of Monday's podcast, in addition to kind of celebrating this Dodgers World Series. But ultimately, I'm very grateful. No, this series maybe was not as much of a heavyweight fight as we projected it to be, and maybe that was a miscalculation. Maybe it was just bad luck and we just didn't get the best version of the Yankees, but maybe this was the best version of the Yankees. In some ways it was, in a lot of senses, where their best players did ultimately show up and it didn't matter because they were just a little bit too sloppy. But ultimately, this series ends in five games. The Dodgers are the champs. I do feel lucky to have attended these games, to have seen some very, very memorable moments from Freddie's Grand Slam, from Volpe's Grand Slam, to so many just weird things in between that we couldn't have even fathomed as of happening at the start of the series. But that's baseball, right? That's what it is. That's why we love this sport. That's why we don't get tired of it. People ask, oh, you get burnt out? I mean, I'm tired, but I'm definitely not burn out. I'm excited for free agency. I'm excited for the first Jerry DePoto trade. I'm excited for so many things that will transpire over the next few months. And I am so lucky and so grateful to do this podcast with my friend Jake. I'm so grateful that people listen to it at all, that are not just our mothers, because that's what it was for a while. And sometimes still feels like it is still the case. I'm thankful to producer Andrew Hartz, a Yankees fan who hopefully got more sleep than us, but still woke up early after his team went down in flames to produce this podcast, and has been an absolutely fantastic producer who has been so flexible and making this show possible. And there's a lot of people at Yahoo in our first year this season that have made the show possible. Our editors, our producers, so many people that we're super grateful for. And if you've listened to the show in the many iterations, the number of people that I have talked to over the past month, they're like, oh yeah, I listened to the original Barbercast. And I'm like, oh wow, okay, we've been doing this for a while. So the people that have followed us for as long as they have and continue to support us, it means a lot to us. And this is not like a goodbye or anything. We'll be back next week. But anytime we get to an end of a season, and this was, from a professional standpoint, by far, I think, the most fulfilling and challenging and exciting and cool season that we've ever had by far. And Yahoo is just a massive part of that, because they kind of, brought us in and allowed us to do everything under one roof. And for that, we're very grateful and excited to do it again next year and into the offseason. So anyway, those were a bunch of sentimental thoughts. Jake, do you have anything before you fall asleep right on this recording?
So I agree with everything you said, and I echo it. And I could get sappier than you, as I want to do, but I shan't.
Yeah.
I will leave everyone with the following image. At what point during the Dodger celebration, I saw Teoscar Hernandez carrying one of his three sons. And as is, commonplace in these post-game celebrations, the kids are around and they're up past their bedtime. And kids of a certain age like understand that they're witnessing something important, but don't always get the context of it, right? And I hear this little child in the arms of Teo, who just made himself a whole lot of money. That kid doesn't know it yet, but he's not going to have to pay for college. And I hear this kid go, "No more baseball?" And I hear Teo go back to him, "No more baseball." And while Teoscar is technically correct, I believe that his vocal tone was incorrect. It was not "no more baseball," Jordan Schusterman. It was "no more baseball."
More baseball, always more baseball. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Andrew Hartz, again. You can email us, baseballbarbcast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. And we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the parade, Dodgers fans. Live it up. You finally got that parade. So enjoy it.
No. More baseball.